Diabetes Insights, Breakthroughs and Innovators. The EASD TV podcast from the annual meeting of the European Association for the Study of Diabetes.
Hello again. Welcome back to EASD TV. Now, one of the recent innovations of the EASD is to ask the Early Career Academy to suggest sessions. And one of the sessions that they were very keen to have was about journals. So let me introduce our distinguished cast here. We have Pierre Larafouy, and you are an Early Career Academy.
Yes, I used to be. I left last year the Early Career Academy.
You've grown up.
I've grown up now. I'm an old one.
We have Hendrik Mulder, who of course would be very familiar to you as the Editor-in-Chief of Diabetologia. We have Maria Hodges, who is the publisher of Diabetologia. And of course, now we must not forget Metabologia. At Springer Nature. And finally, we have Annette Sherman, and she's representing those many of you that are reviewers. Exactly. So let's start with you, Pierre. Why in particular were the Early Career Academy so keen to get journals? And what was it about journals in particular that you wanted discussed?
I think we have a lot of questions about the way we publish our results, because it's a very important step in any careers-wise to get recognition, to evolve, and even to get grants. And it's also a great result to get things out. But the system we have regarding publication is quite alarming. We have a very high number of publications. We don't know exactly where to publish, what to publish. So that's why we really wanted to have insight from reviewers, editors, publishers, to know a little bit more about what could be the nice new systems, maybe the new generation can also bring regarding these systems.
So I'm now going to Maria. Tell us what's going on in journals at the moment, because it's been through a period of real turbulence recently. Open access, predatory journals, paper mills, there are all sorts of issues. Gold access, green access, I mean, all sorts of things. So tell us where we are.
I think there is the perfect storm of events that are happening. We've got a range of journals that are predatory and have been hijacked. We have paper mills.
Now, when you say predatory, what do we mean by predatory?
So ones that are deliberately going out to publish papers for a fee, but don't publish them in a recognised journal. So most people want journals that have high rigorous standards, often want an impact factor or a society journal. And journals can mimic these and then can fool authors into publishing them.
And you were also saying paper mills.
Yes, so paper mills are fraudulent papers, which are often completely fake and fabricated results. And they masquerade as real papers. They look on the surface very real, and it's only when you dig into it that you realise that there are probably no results underlying that at all. And in addition, we've got AI generated papers, which is a new and a phenomenon in the last 2 years, and we can see a huge expansion in the number of papers that are being submitted, especially reviews and comments. And we suspect, but we can't quite definitively tell yet, that AI is generating the papers, and there's probably no real results underlying these papers.
So that's a lot of, and then of course we've got the pre-publication. How has that played into? Because that really developed in COVID, didn't it?
So preprints. Yeah, I think actually that might be a solution rather than a problem. Preprints typically are not peer reviewed, and they publish they are screened by and put online. And in COVID, it was very valuable because it meant you could get results out, preliminary results out as fast as possible when there was a lack of data, really, at the beginning of that epidemic. I think that actually preprints might be a solution in that you can see the provenance of a paper, you see it develop in peer review, and you know it's authentic.
Okay. Hendrik, from your point of view, what are the issues facing a journal like Diabetologia?
Yeah, well, so I think in general, the problem stems from the shift in the publishing landscape, where we're leaving the classical subscription-based publishing, going into the open access paradigm. And on a theoretical point of, on a theoretical level, all of this is wonderful because clearly science should be available to anyone. The problem is that it has created a business model for people who are not serious players in the field. So basically anyone today can masquerade as a publisher, as, you know, as an editor at a journal. And by different modes of communication, they can actually entrap people. And this is the driving force of the predatory journals. So it's an unfortunate side effect of the open access paradigm. And then you add AI into the stew, and then you suddenly have an even greater complexity of the problem.
Tell me about this in terms of the reviewer, because, of course, you know, peer review has been the absolute cornerstone in journals ever since there were journals.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I think it's very important that an independent expert has a closer look into a story, because we as reviewers are also scientists. We know how it is. If you have your own data, you are fascinated by this. And you bring in a story. However, I always appreciate to get a second and a third opinion on my results, on what I want to sell to the public and to the community. If we avoid a review process, there is no controllable false data, flaw data, inappropriate methodological and statistical analysis. And I think this is really important to keep the quality of science, because the quality of science has an impact on the health of the people, because all our results, like little puzzle pieces, come together to define a better diagnosis or prevention or treatment and so on. And if there are wrong data or data which were just generated by AI and not based on true findings, there is a risk that the patients at the end have to suffer. And not only the patients, also the young scientists who are at university, because wrong findings may also get included in textbooks so that the education can decrease in the quality.
And one of the issues, I mean, you as an early career, now you're all grown up, of course, but in your career, you will increasingly be asked to review yourself. But actually, many people turn down reviewing now, and that's partly because there has been so many papers produced that actually it's become a terrible treadmill, and fewer and fewer people want to devote themselves to it, especially when they're not paid to do it, and it takes up so much time. So, you know, there are a lot of different factors at play here. Hendrik, how do you deal with this?
So I think actually at Diabetologia we are in a quite fortunate situation, because people have a lot of respect and maybe even love for the journal. So they are willing to help us. Finding reviewers is not, of course it's not always easy, but it works out quite well for us. We do recognize that it may take longer time now, so time from submission to publication increases due to the fact that it's hard to find reviewers, but I think overall we're in a quite good situation. Our problem is that we want to run our journal in a very rigorous fashion, with rigorous peer review of several reviewers, associate editors that are sort of the scientific experts that assess the papers. And after papers are accepted, we want to have a high quality process where the papers are copy edited, etc. And all of this costs money.
You are a Rolls Royce, Hendrik.
Maria, fortunately, is a very understanding publisher, but still, we feel under pressure from the publisher to cut our costs. And this is not really in agreement with what we try to achieve. So there is an inherent conflict here where business considerations collide with quality considerations. And I don't have a fantastic solution to solve the problem, but it is a problem, and I think we need to sit down and discuss how we can do this in the best possible way.
And of course, the other big driver of all of this is that publications are what gets you promotion, tenure, grants. And so there's a huge drive for publication. I was saying to somebody earlier that Fred Sanger published just 5 papers in his entire lifetime and had 2 Nobel Prizes for his Sanger sequencing. But it is an increasing pressure on young academics to produce papers. So, Pierre, is that one of the things that really weighs on you?
I think it does, but I think also times are changing because, for example, there was this DORA, this San Francisco Declaration on Research Assessment, which say we should avoid looking too much at impact factors or number of publications, but trying to find new metrics. So I think it's very important we try to value also the work of researchers, not only on the number of papers they publish, but rather on other activities like reviewing. And I think some journals are starting also to acknowledge reviewers and even to open the reviewers so people can see how the reviews were made for transparency. Also everything for educational, for any societal things. So we need really to rethink how we assess research. But of course, we also want to publish quality papers. And when I mean quality papers, it's also data which will help other researchers or clinicians to be reused. And that's why I think we also need to move from paradigm of publishing only results to publishing data, to publishing protocols. And we see a brand new type of journals which are opening now to publish all this kind of important scientific food for everyone else.
And Maria, one of the other issues is the impact factor. I mean, not everybody's going to publish in Cell or Nature, which actually may not be appropriate for the kind of research that they're doing. So for some people, you know, the journals which don't have such a great impact factor may actually be the top journal in their particular area, and yet they don't have the impact factor that would suggest that. So how do we overcome those problems?
This is a very difficult question because actually this involves
multiple stakeholders. Yes, will you solve it by tea time, please,
yes.
Maria?
Yeah. This is partly due to institutes will need to think about how they evaluate research and parts of the world. And actually, I think Europe has been quite good at looking at the content of a paper and rather than just quantity, but there's other parts of the world where promotions are measured on quantity of publications and also on the impact factor of publications. And so this will need a global change in the way that institutions and funders evaluate research. And it's a difficult question because in a way it is easier to say, here's my paper, it's in Nature, so it must be good. You know, otherwise we need more, people need more reviewers who can actually will read the paper and will assess it and can convey that information. And I wondered if I could pick up on a point. This is, it's not a problem that's just associated with open access publishing. And in my talk, I will actually say that the top 2 journals with the most retractions are actually hybrid journals. And it's really driven by the institution and the pressure to publish rather than just open access in itself.
Annette, your thoughts on this?
I think the problem is that just going for the impact factor is so easy for everyone who judges a grant application or the career of a specific person who applies for a professorship or so. But we have to go back and see this more critical. For instance, in the medical field, it's much easier to get papers into these high-level journals like Nature, Cell Metabolism, etc. But there are also researchers who are mainly focusing on mechanisms, doing, for instance, tissue culture experiments or mouse studies. They have it much more difficult to reach these high-level or high-impact journals. And we have to rethink the whole thing and get a step back and just go for the results and the impact of the results. Mm. So how relevant is this for the community, for our understanding, and for the overall knowledge
And you've got completely different ways of doing science now. So in genomics, you might have 700 people listed on a paper as authors. So it's quite different. So it's partly academia that needs to get its house in order. It's partly, I guess, with the paper mills. Actually, that's downright fraud, isn't it? I mean, this is criminal.
Yes.
I mean, this is not just, we shouldn't be just wringing our hands. We should be pressing for prosecution. But how, I don't know how you deal with the predatory journals. Perhaps, well, how would you deal with the predatory journals, Hendrik?
Well, first of all, I think it's important to raise awareness that they are there and you should ignore them. Mm. I think that's probably the best. So my advice to any scientist, and perhaps particularly the younger ones, that don't ever communicate with a journal that you don't know about, because it's highly unlikely that this is an important journal in the field. And if you're uncertain, ask your colleagues, do you know what this is? And most likely they will say, I've never heard of it, and then you know, just discard.
Pierre, is this good advice?
Yeah, I definitely, we start to get, especially even as a young researcher, we get, can you publish in that and that? Sometimes it's very easy to spot because they want you to publish in very different thing from what you're working at. But you also need to think that publishing should be an active thing and not coming from something people ask you to publish. So it's definitely, we need to think about our career. And we know publishing in predatory journals can be really harmful then when you go for professorship or for grant applications.
Finally, Maria, polish your crystal ball for us. Where do you think we'll be in 5 years' time? Because the journal business has really changed so dramatically. And there are all things that were sort of bubbling away, but I think COVID really just sort of accelerated it all, didn't it?
Yeah, I suspect that all the publishers, or all the legitimate publishers, will come together with the funders and the institutions on a way of validating first identity of the researcher, so that we know exactly who the person is. Do they work in the diabetes field? So that we know whether they're legitimate. And I think there will be a move towards open data, that we'll be asking more and more for the data to be deposited or to be made available, so we can know what's real and what's not. And I think the challenge for the future is knowing what's real.
And the one thing that that we should be careful not to do is exclude those in developing research countries that find it extraordinarily difficult to get into journals. You know, I was just thinking of the Diabetologia special edition at the moment, which calls up the need for diversity of data, but actually that also means access to publication for Absolutely. Scientists in those countries. And we have to make sure that in doing something that ensures the future of journals in high-income countries, that it doesn't disadvantage those in countries where they don't have those resources.
I agree. And that is a very valid point. And this is something you hear from colleagues in those disadvantaged countries, that, okay, we can at least publish in, so to say, predatory journals. But what we do at Diabetologia is that when we have papers from those countries, we take a special view of those and really look at them carefully. Is there something here that could be of value? I wouldn't say that we apply different quality measures, but maybe we do, because we are so keen on having them publishing with us and showing that there is room for them in the academic space.
So this is something that is going to continue a discussion. This is certainly not something that's going to be done and dusted in a short time. But Pierre, are you satisfied with the quality of the debate that you've now prompted through the Early Career Academy?
Yes, definitely. And I'm looking forward from hearing all the presentations at the symposium later today.
Fantastic. And of course, you can see all of that on EASD's website. And we will be back soon at EASD TV. In the meantime, thank you all very much indeed.
Thank you for joining us on the podcast of the European Association for the Study of Diabetes. We hope you enjoyed today's insights. If you did, go ahead and hit subscribe, and you'll always stay up to date with the latest in diabetes research and discoveries. And if you'd like to dive deeper, You can find plenty more information at easd.org.